You hear that? Your dog knows spring is coming sooner than you think. Dog walks, dog parks, playing fetch, all the stuff your dog loves to do with you. But the warmer weather also means that fleas and ticks are coming back. Fleas and ticks are in the grass, in the woods, and even on their dog friends. Fleas are an itchy nuisance, can easily get into your home, furniture, and beds, which can be terrible. Ticks are even worse. They're hard to spot, but can carry disease and get your dog really sick. PetMeds has your furry friend protected with the best products to prevent flea and ticks all year long. PetMeds pharmacists connect directly with your vet to save you time and deliver the best products for your pet. PetMeds offers low prices on all flea and tick meds, including NexGard, Simparica, and more. And PetMeds AutoShip helps you save even more with additional discounts on regular shipments of PetMeds, dog food, and other high-quality supplies. So get ready for all the spring fun now. Visit PetMeds.com and use promo code PODCAST to save 40% on your first auto ship order. That's PetMeds.com and promo code PODCAST.
Welcome to episode 93 of Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of ComicBook.com. I am your host, Kofi Outlaw, and joining me today is my co-host, Matthew Aguilar.
Yay, yay!
We've also brought our video game guy back, Mr. Roland Bishop.
Hello, thanks for having me.
And over in the gym corner is Mr. Charlie Ridgely is back.
Hello,
Turn up once again, and he is quite turned up already. So, we got this fine collection of all dudes, because, there's a lot of political jokes. I'm going to skip for this one, but,
I'm amazed.
We've got a variety of things, to talk about today. So we had to get a kind of a variety collection of people to help us talk through it all. We are going to review Netflix's highly anticipated adaptation of The Witcher. We are going to talk about the kind of mind-bending new trailer for Chris Nolan's new movie Tenet. We are also going to be talking about the latest episode of The Mandalorian, the latest Batman comic storyline that was kind of a big game changer. And, well, let's just start out on a hopeful note. We rarely ever start out on hopeful notes here.
Hey, so positivity.
Let's start out on a hopeful note and talk about our first news story today. We've gotten word that New Mutants might be coming.
Yeah.
No.
Remember, guys? You guys remember that? Remember New Mutants?
New Mutants?
So, I mean, some of you may not remember this, but, like, in the time before Disney owned all, like, Fox owned the X-Men franchise, and there were a couple final films they were going to put out before that franchise wrapped. One was Dark Phoenix, and I don't remember if that ever came out. I don't recall. It's kind of hazy.
It's a thing.
But New Mutants was the other one, and the one we were kind of really excited about. It was a version of New Mutants that wasn't very much like the comics, except for the Demon Bear storyline premise. But it took some fresh-faced stars like Maisie Williams from Game of Thrones, dude from Stranger Things, chick from The Witch, and other stuff. Yeah, who I'm talking about.
That's their IMDb.
Anya Taylor-Joy.
Those people.
Those people. I mean, did their movie come out?
Oh, my God.
I rest my case.
So good.
Yeah, maybe if their movie had come out, I'd know who they are. But, you know, their movie didn't.
Fair enough.
But that's all to say, we've just gotten word from one of the stars of New Mutants. Saying,
Charlie Heaton, the one from Stranger Things.
Yeah, Charlie Heaton. Like, doesn't he play Charlie in the show?
No, he plays
I just feel like you know all the Charlies.
Jonathan Byers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The guy. He's the guy.
There's they have like some kind of telepathic link.
Always swings a bat, has the shirt, listens to the music. I remember. Yeah, so that guy said New Mutants is coming out and that we are going to get it. I'll read what he said. I don't know. No, it's coming out next year, but we filmed it almost 2 years ago. It's the release date that's been moved quite a while. So he's saying that New Mutants is arriving in 2020. But what does this guy know? Who knows?
He doesn't sound very confident.
Be fair, Disney set a release date for it. Now, that doesn't mean it's
Disney
actually coming out.
Disney has set release dates for it. Fox has set release dates for it.
Disney put it on the slate for April 3rd, 2020.
There's some guy I was given change to that had a date for it that, like, yeah.
The other Charlie that somehow mentally linked to you and all
other
Charlie.
There's another Charlie saying another date somewhere.
Was like, it's coming.
I mean, so,
Juniper.
Like, we've had several conversations about, in all seriousness, we've had several conversations about New Mutants and, like, the Fox kind of X-Men franchise at this point. I mean, this is just such the delayed reaction if this movie does come out for, like, this franchise that is now dead and gone. And I mean, Dark Phoenix did a lot of work to to put a nail in this franchise and just say, yeah, enough of this. But
can I say something?
We're getting this movie finally. Yeah. I mean, you are a co-host, I mean, guess.
Well, no, like, here's my thing. I remember when we first talked about the subject, I could have cared less because this movie just did not look great to me. So I was always like, that's not really the New Mutant take that I
want. Hashtag not my New Mutants.
Then as this movie has continued to be pushed down the road and kicked around and whatever, I'm almost more interested now because, like, I've had 2 years of right. like building hype, so to speak. And I just want to see the train wreck that it will be. I'm more curious now. I'm more into, like, I will actually, whenever they release it on whatever godforsaken platform they release it on, I will watch it now because I'm curious. I would not have watched it before. I would not have paid it.
This thing's coming to theaters. Get ready. It's coming to theaters.
What are you talking about? Are you serious?
Yes, 100%.
I don't think this is coming to theaters.
I don't think this is coming to theaters, dude. Disney has
a good Disney
movie.
Plus promotional yes. weekend. Yeah, that's what I see.
I normally would say so, but one, it's like a horror movie. Also, Disney only has 2 MCU movies coming out this year.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they're going to like try to make it.
This is not an MCU movie.
I agree. I'm just saying for money purposes, you have a free X-Men movie that when you bought a thing, it was like, you know, like in an NBA trade, you like the extra pieces you just need to make the money work that you don't really care about. You've got it just as a bonus.
No one's going to see this, Charlie. Yeah, no one's going to see this in the theater.
I mean,
put it on Hulu and let it do what it does.
Even if it makes $10 million. That's $10 million you didn't have before.
Dude, I don't agree. I mean, wholeheartedly.
It's extra money. It's free
Charlie, you're
money.
Laying down quite a few bets in 2020 already.
Free money.
You've laid Disney. Down bets about Cats. Now you're laying down bets about
So
this.
You're going to send it there to die without any advertising? Like, they're not going to put any money into it?
Yeah, because there's cost to putting money putting something
into it. Yeah, there's some cost, but you're going to make more than it costs.
You're not necessarily.
Just for advertising. If Disney's only paying for advertising, you will make more than that at the box office.
No, not necessarily.
I just love how you come out of the game right out of the
game.
So yes, are the X-Men movies a mess? Absolutely. You could, one, try to draw an X-Men audience to this, but also, let's remember, this is a PG-13 horror movie. Those movies sell tickets. No matter how many movies have we seen from Blumhouse, from Warner Brothers, these movies that get 20% or lower Rotten Tomatoes scores, but they do really well at the box office and make a bunch of money because they're PG-13 horror movies and people can go see them. Kids want to go see horror movies and be scared with the friends and laugh and giggle and stuff
Dark
in the theaters.
Phoenix made $65 million domestically.
Because it was billed as, oh, here's a big X-Men movie. I can't talk.
So
this
the smaller movie is going to make more?
It doesn't have X-Men in the title. You're billing it as a PG-13 horror movie, and people will go see that.
Right now, it's being billed as a memory. No one remembers it unless we talk about it. no one cares.
PG-13 horror movie, that's all they got to know.
I see this coming on Hulu. That's good. They want to get those Hulu subscription numbers up. Yeah, that's a good place for it.
Get the spike. Get the ad stuff,
Halloween,
and you're good.
Just dump it out. And like, why not?
We'll see.
Fall,
I think it's going to hit
theaters.
September
2020, Hulu.
I'm not paying a ticket to go see
this.
If it comes down to theater, I will go see it when it streams on
what
TNT.
What you're
going to
see is people are going to wait the necessary 2 months before they just take it out of theaters and dump it on Hulu anyway. Like, I don't
see it. We'll see.
Charlie, you got a lot of bets going down in 2020.
We'll see.
You were laying down.
This is on the record.
I think this movie's going to hit theaters. Sure.
I don't think that's going to happen, and I don't want to see it happen like at all. So, I mean, that's just me. But everybody's, you know, free to have your opinion because we are still a democracy for now. We're going to be moving right along and talking about Chris Nolan is back. He's coming out back after Dunkirk. He's leaving historical stuff behind. And getting back to that sweet, sweet sci-fi, mystery, action, cerebral stuff with no heart. I mean,
wow.
Like, have we checked Chris Nolan as that he's not like a Westworld robot? We don't know yet. His movies could be theoretically argued to have been made by an artificial intelligence.
Well, we could have checked, but that hasn't happened yet.
Yeah. I mean, with little emotion, but I like to knock Chris Nolan just because, you know, he's such a sacred cow. But no, we got this new movie, Tenet, with what's his name? John David. Washington.
Dude,
David.
Black Klansman.
I was so excited.
No,
I jumble up the order of his name.
I wasn't criticizing that. I'm just saying I was so excited. Like, because the minute he comes on screen, I was like, oh my God, because I love that movie so much. And his
role
in it.
Don't go around screaming, it's Black Klansman. Yeah, please don't go around screaming that out loud. I mean, we know what you're talking about, sure, but other people might get confused. But we saw the new movie, so this is a, like a classic Chris Nolan sci-fi kind of mystery action movie, kind of in the vein, very much in the vein of Inception, this trailer kind of felt like.
Yeah.
From the opening city shots to
definitely
everything. I don't know, like most Nolan teasers, this is just kind of the overall concept. The world is drab, kind of dangerous. Something mysterious is happening with mysterious people.
You thought it was drab?
I mean, every Nolan film is drab. It's kind of drab and dour world.
I'm not the biggest like Nolan, like whatever, but I will say I always think his stuff is stylish. Like, I always like how it's
no,
shot.
I meant drab as in like the world is just like, it's not like a happy world. It's just kind of like a very
dour.
Dour. That's dour. A good word. That's you. A better kind of like.
Makes sense.
Yeah. There you go. So, and it's this dour world of kind of, and it's always in this weird kind of secretive espionage feeling kind of world that we're playing in. And then there's a big, of course, visual sci-fi hook that's kind of thrown in the mix. And then this one, we basically get John David Washington.
There it is.
Son of Denzel, first of his name, kind of coming in here. And this is basically the plot to that Michael Bay Six Underground movie in the first half of this trailer, which is like they're recruiting people with skills who are seemingly dead. And then they kind of bring them into this organization to do something. And that something is prevent World War Free. World War Free. That's a great promotional sale to do that. World War III.
World War Free guy.
Yeah, dude. I mean,
oh
like,
my God. We're
yeah,
on fire
discount today. Mattress. I just got your new fire sale. Just World War Free. World War III. And basically, we're told it's not nuclear holocaust. It's going to be this other thing. And we don't know yet what that other thing is. But there's a lot of scenes of like some espionage action, some shootouts, and something with people moving backwards.
I was gonna say, can we talk about that, please?
Yeah, we're because definitely getting that.
Time is like moving backwards for some parts of it, but not all parts of it, right? That's
I feel
what
like
it is.
It's just gonna be some weird Mobius strip type deal. Like,
yeah,
where time is. I mean, it's gonna be like Dr. Manhattan the movie. Like time is moving and this place is all at once, and you can hop various rides on various waves to do things. And I don't know. I mean, let's just start with the WTF of it all, I guess. Like, what do you guys think about this trailer? Like, what do you think is happening here? Charlie, I feel like you may have some ideas maybe that you're itching to talk about.
I like Nolan movies. I don't think they're like the greatest movies ever, but I really enjoy them. I think they're really fun. And I love, he thinks of weird stuff and it's exciting. And this was exactly what I wanted it to be. It looks crazy. It's got a loud, repeated sound in the trailer, you know, like every other Christopher Nolan movie. And that's really cool.
Does that dude just have like a tumor and he just hears this all the
well,
time?
Well, this one sounded like they pulled it from the Prowler sound
Scott,
from Spider-Verse.
Tony Scott movies.
You know, in Spider-Verse, the sound that sounded like the Prowler thing. I feel like this is like a perspective situation with Tenet. Like, they keep talking about his abilities and what he can do and stuff. And I think he can see things at, like, before they happen. And so it's going to play with the perspective of when they're shooting it, of like, we see it happen.
Well, not to interrupt you, but I'll read the premise real quick. Two international spies are sent out to stop World War III from occurring at the hands of a mysterious threat using the unique technology of time reversal.
Well, then never mind.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think you're wrong. I don't think you're wrong about that. I think in order to be able to kind of master that technology, you might have to have that ability to see things before they're going to happen and then be able to kind of counteract.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Like honestly, though, like no matter how crazy the plot is, like I like John David Washington a lot.
Yeah.
Robert Pattinson's the other spy.
Mm. Yeah.
That's great. And then Elizabeth Debicki's in this and she's been fantastic and everything.
Is,
like
cast is always on point in a Nolan movie.
It's really exciting.
The names are
Michael
not.
Michael Caine.
The character names are never on point in a Nolan movie, but like, except Batman, which he had no choice, but like, yeah. Inception has terrible names. There's terrible names up and down his filmography, but the actors are always great. I say that all to say, like, I mean, he always pulls together some really talented casts. So yeah, this one is John David Washington, Robert Pattinson, Elizabeth Debicki, Aaron Taylor Johnson, Clements Posey, Michael Caine, Kenneth Branagh, Himesh Patel, and some other people.
I thought you were just joking about Michael Caine, but he's really in there.
There was
an obligatory Michael Caine shot. Yeah,
didn't
trailer.
Even.
Just,
that's why I saw the tweets.
You,
gloss,
hey, if anything else, if the sounds, if the style, if the weird story did not give away that this was a Christopher Nolan movie, here's Michael Caine.
Yeah, yep. The soundtrack was pretty. Yeah. I got very like Because did you watch the trailer?
Yeah, I watched the trailer, but apparently I did not catch my
I got kind of like Quantum Break vibes, especially like towards the very end.
No,
right?
There was a, I was trying to think of what video game is.
When he's moving like and it kind of stutters and then the guy like there was very there was some cool visor. I mean, some of the stuff is kind of like meh. You know, like there's a couple parts in the trailer where it's like, okay, this is your typical type of espionage story and they're stopping this threat. But the time stuff is the stuff I want to see more of. And I thought there was just enough in here to hook me. Like just enough.
I mean, Nolan has a little bit of Shyamalan in him where like nothing is as it appears. And so, I mean, we're going to follow rabbit trails from this and none of this is going to make any sense until the final 10 minutes of the movie. And then everything we've seen makes sense. And, you know. It's,
well, I say all that to say, does? I mean, I was a Chris Nolan lover, like in his indie days, like in the beginnings of The Following and Memento, which is where I really kind of saw that.
Memento is still his best movie.
Yeah, I went out and saw that when it was released in just like three theaters in Philadelphia because I just heard about it. I didn't know who he was or what. I just heard the premise and I was like, oh, I got to see that. And yeah, after that, I've been hooked. But I love Insomnia, whereas many people don't. Mm-hmm. I think that's Insomnia one of his best movies. And yeah, Robin Williams, great in that.
I mean,
I have fallen out of love with Nolan, and since the post Inception era, I think that was like the height of it. And I mean, I can't lie, Inception like changed my career and made me like exponentially bigger in this career. That Inception ending explained, where we kind of invented the ending explained post, was just it changed my life. So I can't like hate on the man. He's done things for me for sure, but yeah, I mean, I didn't like Dark Knight Rises. I wasn't a fan. I really do not like Interstellar. I like Dunkirk. I'm not going to hate on Dunkirk at all, but that was kind of a whole different movie.
Dunkirk's not a typical Nolan movie.
My only worry is what you brought up is Interstellar, because, again, it has those things of nothing makes sense until it all comes together. And Interstellar tried to do that and, like, completely lost me of, like, this is a convoluted mess a little bit.
Well, yeah. And, like, for me, it was also that was the glaring indication. Like, I joked about, Nolan being a robot, but that one really bothered me because that's supposed to be such a emotional, family-connected story, and it's just, like, so cold and, like, not – it's very cerebral, but, like, no heart to it, which was such a weird thing for that movie. And, you know – I remember being like one of those Nolan fanboys who would riot, like rail against critics who dared suggest he couldn't do heart or, you know, action as well.
Yeah.
But I mean, I've kind of come around to that. So I hope that either this movie utilizes that strength entirely or injects some kind of emotional core into it. Yeah, that's just me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fair enough.
All right. Well, we'll wait for that next trailer, which will have a lot of more crazier effects of time reversal and all that stuff. And we'll get more plot lines. So you know how it goes with these Nolan films. Moving right along, we're going to take a quick break because when we come back, we got a lot of stuff to deep dive into. Yeah. So we're going to get to it.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from the people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
All right, so we're back, and Nolan, Roland and Matt, I'm going to throw it to you guys.
Hey, Nolan, everyone. I traded out at the ad break. I'm the twin brother, Nolan.
Oh, man. I'm going to throw it to you guys because we want to talk about The Witcher. By the time people are hearing this, The Witcher is now on Netflix. And if you're not running out to see Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker, which, by the way, we will have a whole bonus episode to cover full spoilers discussion when the movie's out in theaters on Friday to make sure, you know, you have a fair chance to go see it. And we're going to keep it all contained to that episode. So while you're not doing that, The Witcher is going to be on Netflix. And this is like, one of the most highly anticipated new shows of the year. Henry Cavill, this kind of book property, game property. Matt, Roland, you guys know, how is it?
Well, quick thing real quick before we really dive in. Do we want to go spoilers with this? Or do we want to kind of be vague since it
will
have
come out?
I would
keep it vague because people are not going to be able to binge watch this
all. So okay. I figure we can revisit later with a full spoiler thing. So just for clarification, we've both seen same amount of episodes and everything. We've seen the first 5 out of 8. So there's still like 3 episodes that, you know, a lot of the new trailers, you're starting to see some of the footage.
They're going
to
change the game of the show pretty significantly, they look like.
Because so far, we haven't seen some of those moments happen, like as far as like the main characters all coming together. So it'll be interesting to see how that kind of maybe affects things. But
agreed.
So far, and I'll actually go with you first because I'm interested to see. We both played the games.
Yep.
We both read the books.
Yep.
And we were both coming into this with high anticipation, but also they had been very clear they were going to make some changes. So far, without kind of going into like specifics, were you happy with the changes?
I would say that the changes felt necessary.
Yeah.
That the we know that it's based largely on the books, not on the games. So coming into that, if you are very familiar with the games from CD Projekt Red, be aware of that fact.
Yeah.
But it adapts a lot of stories from the first 2 short story collections, The Last Wish and Sword of Destiny. So like we had some idea of what to expect.
Yeah.
And then the showrunners and the executive producers and the stars have all been very clear that, like, you know, we wanted to tell some stories that maybe set up Ciri and Yennefer, 2 of the main stars of the show, a little better than maybe necessarily the chronological order of the books would allow. So there's some significant changes right from the start.
Yes.
But overall, I think they work, even if I'm not particularly happy with the way they sort of interconnect and cut things together.
Yeah, there's kind of and there's one particular thing that, yeah, I don't kind of want to give away in that regard of how the plot plays out. But there is that was kind of my biggest. I ended up like watching it 2 times through.
Yeah.
And one of the things I noted in my review was that, you know,
which should be up by the time people are listening to this,
was, you know, and that one is also spoiler free. So that way you don't have to worry about if you haven't watched it, it still gives you a good idea. But was the fact that, like, I needed a second watch to kind of grasp some of those. Oh, this person was supposed to be here, or this person. There was a couple of times where those blanks didn't really get filled the first time through. And this just because you're trying to take in a lot. You got a lot of information. There's 3 main characters to really keep an eye on, especially over like the middle 3 episodes. So I did need that. Like, it is something you kind of have to pay attention to, how the story plays out, because you might be a little confused at times. There is one episode in particular that kind of drags a bit. For me, and it's a Ciri episode.
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about.
There's a particular Ciri episode I was like, okay, I am so bored just from what is happening here. It doesn't seem consequential either by events that happen yet. So I'm hoping that happens. But so that's kind of just my, like, the nitpicks aside. But overall, I really enjoyed this. As someone who heard a lot of the feedback on, you know, Geralt and, you know, Cavill's picture and, like, people having doubts, the dude nails it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He's great, Geralt.
He's so good at Geralt. Some of the little, the books do a very good job of, like, on one instant, there's something completely brutal and dark, and then the very next scene is something completely the opposite, and it makes that feel, there's a rhythm, and it makes that's something the books do really well.
And it makes it feel natural.
Yeah. There's a great scene, and it's towards the end, and there's a scene between, which not too spoilery, but there's a scene between Geralt and Yennefer that epitomizes this towards the end of that 5-episode arc, that, like, some crazy stuff has happened, and then literally the next thing after is, like, this, the music changes completely, and there's, like, this different tone, but it all feels natural. It all feels like it just kind of flows. Geralt's weird, his, like, mannerisms, talking the roach, like, those little things are like, what are you judging me for? I feel like I have to give a special shout out to Yaskir, Joey,
aka Dandelion,
yes,
though not in the show.
By the way, I think I've come around.
Calling it dandelion.
For those of you that don't know, Matt was very anti this name change.
I did not like this name change. I'm so used to calling him dandelion, but he's so good. Joey Beatty is, I believe, how you pronounce it.
I think so.
He is phenomenal in the role. He's the bard that travels with Geralt. Some of those scenes with those two together are some of the absolute just most delightful scenes. And to me, by the way, the first episode, while a little slow at the beginning, does a really good job of setting the tone. There is a fight scene that establishes like one of the things people have come to know about Geralt. And it's towards the end. This scene, I have watched that fight scene 6 times through. And I showed it to like Jamie and a couple other people and like, watch this. And it was one of those things of where if you had doubts about how they were going to handle the fight scenes and like the brutality of stuff, it's awesome. Like it's so good. And
you know,
I
do want to talk about one thing. I think it's interesting because both of you and me come from a lot of foreknowledge. We know a lot about this world, yeah, a lot about this franchise as we're coming into the show. And, you know, we had mentioned previously about how some of the construction was maybe a little difficult and hard to follow. And I wonder if someone who is totally fresh,
yeah,
doesn't know what to expect, doesn't know who's who, if it might actually allow them to piece things together a little easier.
Yeah.
Because we kind of come into it expecting this linear progression of this and then this and then this. And when we start getting hints that maybe that's not the case, we're like, wait, so
there's name drops in here that I go, well, how does that fit in?
Right.
What
because
time
we
is
know
it?
About it. Because
yeah.
We know about it.
You know, they mentioned Kara Morhen at one point. I'm like, okay, well, where in the timeline is that? Because we know what happens to that place, right? So there's things you expect. And I agree. I think especially with Ciri and Yennefer, that will help immensely.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. If you have no expectation of their
Yennefer,
their roles.
I have never, and I'm sure I'll get hate for this. I've never been, actually, I'm on the couch with the right person. Me and Roland are both Triss Marigold fans.
It's true.
From the books and even the games, Yennefer was always very standoffish.
Yep.
Was kind of prickly to me, and I never understood why this dude like loves her and the way that he does. And the show, I feel like, does a remarkable job of giving some empathy. You're able to empathize with this character a bit because you see her from day one, and she is the polar opposite of the character you've come to expect.
I had one question. Who hangs better, Dr. Manhattan or Geralt? Or Geralt?
I like Geralt. Geralt? So far, they have not shown that.
It has not been R-rated, but at the same time, excuse me, I take that back.
Oh, yeah,
I take it back. It has not been X-rated. There have been some scenes, but we have not seen Geralt's little roach.
Now, yet. Wow, you said little roach. There is a lot of nudity in this show.
It is not for kids.
Yeah, it's not. But as far as that going that far, no, that has not been shown.
Could be in the last 3 episodes.
Do they give me some steamy Superman love scenes?
There are several love scenes. Kind of depends on what you're going for there.
Cavill.
Yeah.
You know what we want, Matt.
Yeah. You know what the people want. Not messing around.
No, I'm saying they walk right up to the border and then they stop.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, that's kind of how
I'm picking out what you're putting down. All right.
There's at least one hot and heavy scene, I think, though.
Yeah. All right. So for general audiences, are people just looking for that next Game of Thrones fix? Do you think this will fill the void?
That's a tough question. I personally think that it will, at the very least, prove to be a stopgap. It is not the same. It is not Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
It deals in much more personal stories, I feel like, whereas Game of Thrones became sort of this grand thing.
I think that was one of the biggest things. I remember when we originally talked about it, like Comic-Con, and it was like people keep, because like you'd have Brandons and other people like, yeah, I'm looking for Game of Thrones. It was never going to be Game of Thrones because that's just not the type of story that these are. Like, these are very much centered on the specific group of like a couple characters and their kind of lives and the intermingling and a lot of like, there is political intrigue and there's epic war stuff and there's battles, like all that stuff that, yes, you would see in a Game of Thrones, but it's just a different feel. This world is just different. So I think if they come in with appropriate expectations of, no, I don't want Game of Thrones, I'm looking for something though that might fit in that semi spot. Yes, I think
you think can generate mainstream buzz because this is what Netflix shows live and die by.
No, I think this will have, to me, I don't think this will have any issue like rolling into season two with momentum. I think you'll have a lot of it. It's actually pleased me that Netflix has been pushing this as hard as it has, like advertising wise and getting the people out there and getting more footage out. I've been really pleased with that. I don't think it'll have any issue.
Now, here's what I would say. Matt and I have seen 5 episodes. We've seen multiple yes. different screeners before for different shows. Sometimes when you get those 5 episodes, mm-hmm. you go, I don't know if I need to see any more of this show. I don't know if I want to watch any more of this. I will be watching The Witcher tomorrow morning
yeah.
to see how things end. Like, that's my
Luke Cage. I'm looking at you.
Oh, it's true.
I remember when I got that's those screeners
though.
And I was like, I was jazzed, but I was like, eh, I'm good. And then I was like, oh, hey, I didn't need to watch the second half of that season.
I do have one question because you talk about the void of Game of Thrones. I'm interested in seeing The Witcher. I've been looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that I'm really frustrated by is the Netflix binge thing, especially with Mandalorian that I know we're going to talk about later, and how big of a deal the Mandalorian has become because of its weekly release schedule. And with Game of Thrones, if you're trying to fill that void and be the medieval, you know, type of show on TV, how's this going to work when everyone's going to watch it in a weekend and then we're going to stop talking about it? Is it hindered by the fact that
it's the same way as The Boys did? Boys was bingeable and Nat didn't have a problem building
yeah,
yeah. mouth and building stuff.
That's a whole separate thing. We'll talk about that when The Witcher's been out for a while.
Yeah. I just think it's a very like project by project thing. I don't think one fits all.
It's a structural issue that's not going to be solved.
Yeah.
And that's like Hill House. Hill House was bingeable and we still talked about that. For
yeah.
All right. Moving right along then. Thank you guys. And, be sure to check out a review of the Witcher when it is up on comicbook.com as you are hearing this.
Going to your Witcher.
We're going to jump to The Mandalorian. So, see, episode 7 is now out. It came out in advance of Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker. And so this is the one that kind of allowed all the people who have been saying, complaining about the pacing of The Mandalorian to STFU effectively because... Now all this stuff where people saying it's just meandering, there's no point to the episodes, blah blah blah, Brandon Davis, we're just gonna like, we finally come around to seeing why these events transpired, right? Yeah. Like this episode brings it all together. There was a purpose for all of this journey we've been on, you know, into dealing with this, and it's because basically a lot of the characters we met along the way that the Mandalorian has befriended, the ones he hasn't killed, are coming back together to form this little crew to go back to the planet Navarro and deal with where these first two episodes kind of set things with him taking the child from the client and his handler, Greff. I forget how to say his name all the time because it's crazy. Carl Weathers. So I'm just going to call him. Yeah. Let's just call him.
Can I say Star Wars name?
That's what I call him now.
Brief Carla. Yeah, I know. But it's just, F Star Wars names. I'm not doing this. Carl Weathers. Basically kind of calls him back with a deal that says, if you bring the kid back, we can trick the client and I need him off my back. So use the kid as bait. Come back. We'll kill the client and I'll clear you with the guild. So these bounty hunters stop coming after you. And that'll be that. And of course, the Mandalorian doesn't buy it, so he goes and gets his crew. He gets Gina Carano's ex-shock trooper and Nick Nolte's little curmudgeonly alien guy. And they kind of make a plan. It's bounty hunters kind of making plans on plans to double-cross each other and doing all this stuff. But then we get this big twist thrown in because Baby Yoda, who never ceases to surprise and charm us, reveals something that's pretty pivotal in Star Wars to this point. I mean, it's been kind of muted. We have a lot going on in Star Wars right now, but he reveals the, let's say.
Oh, yeah.
Spoilers.
Whoops.
Spoilers for The Mandalorian, Chapter 7, The Reckoning, on Disney Plus this
catch.
Week.
I totally did.
Very spoilers. Big spoilers.
Spoilers. I'm going to wait like 3 seconds. All right. You can fast forward 3 minutes if you don't want to hear all this. Otherwise, we're going to talk about it. All right, so... Spoilers. Baby Yoda kind of comes over. They all go out. Carl Weathers and the bounty hunters, they go out to kind of go meet the client. They have to camp overnight. They get attacked by these winged creature things. Carl Weathers is like injured and poisoned by one of them. And Baby Yoda, as he's kind of dying, comes over and uses the Force to heal him. So we basically had the debut of Force healing powers, which has been in Star Wars kind of extended content for years, but like in the canon, as I was doing research, it's only been in the Star Wars Uprising mobile game which is considered canon.
Yeah.
It only lasts important. A year.
Wow, yeah.
But it's considered canon. So it's been in there. But this is really, I mean, for all intents and purposes, this is the first real mainstream introduction of force healing in Star Wars. And yeah, it ups Baby Yoda's kind of importance. I mean, if boss, this is man. Kind of power he has it in at this time, you know, when Luke Skywalker's, you know, doing whatever, and we don't know exactly when this is comparatively to when like Luke and Kylo Ren have their thing happen, but you know, the Force and Force users are not as prevalent as they used to be. Mm. So this is a pretty powerful thing that Baby Yoda can do. So there's that. And then this episode has to kind of twist the knife in our hearts because we get introduced to a new villain, Moff Gideon, who's played by Giancarlo Esposito from Breaking Bad fame and many other things, who kind of sets his trap because, of course, Carl Weathers was going to betray the Mandalorian and kill them for the client, but because Baby Yoda saved him, he kills the guys. He triple crosses the guys that he was going to double cross the Mandalorian with.
He trace bust
the bustas. Yeah, and he blasts them, and they go to meet the client to set him up, but the client gets set up, is being set up by Moff.
A lot of setups
Gideon.
In this one.
Wow, geez. Yeah.
It's crosses on crosses.
This is
on crosses.
Like that office gif come to no, life.
It's like that Rick and Morty heist episode, basically.
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
Everybody has another double cross. And so,
everybody
yeah,
wants
Moff
the child.
Gideon is apparently much wiser and kind of smarter strategist than even the client, because the client, when he goes to meet the Mandalorian, which is about to be a double cross, ends up, they all end up getting shot up by Moff Gideon, who has like pretty intense squad of like death troopers and former and like stormtroopers outside the client's kind of base. And yeah, he has the Mandalorian pinned down, and Nick Nolte's alien guy is trying to speed back to the ship with Baby Yoda, who they've kind of, you know, kind of snuck away so yeah. they can get him off planet. But, you know, those damn speeder bikes from Return of the Jedi, you just can't outrun those things. And so Moff Gideon ends up at the end of the episode seemingly killing the alien guy. And he now has Baby Yoda, which has America pretty much more upset
whammy,
and anxious yeah. than, you know, the impeachment hearing. So, like, here we go.
It'll be fine. There is still another episode. Well, and we all know.
The thing. It's the force healing sets up, like, because I really like Quill, the alien character. He's an awesome character. He's kind-hearted. He's a great puppet. Like, he's really cool. And the hope is that they set up the healing in order to maybe save him.
That dude's dead.
I agree. I'm just saying, like, that's the hope is that they can save him.
Well, not only that. So here's the thing. Like,
Baby Yoda can heal. I don't know if Baby Yoda can bring back.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, they took him away. Like, if he was still around, I would get
dude's
it.
Dude's one with the Force now.
But we're not talking about the missing person of this crew. Mm-hmm. IG-11 is still sitting there.
Oh, that's right, man. There's a
on the
going
ship
on.
Protecting the baby. So he's going to come out having formed this new bond with Quill and see the dead body, and he's going to go off.
He's going to lose it.
He's going to
IG-11, Taika Waititi's IG-11 droid.
I cannot wait for that.
That's what's going to happen. Which was something, Charlie, you wanted from the first episode. You were really hoping for that. And he comes back. He's funny. He's been reprogrammed as like just a servant. He's like a 3PO type now. But the Mandalorian doesn't trust him because he thinks that, you know, deep down he can't rewire a droid.
I mean, I wouldn't trust him either, to be frank.
Yeah, neither would I. The guy's too good of a shot.
Like, after seeing what he did in that first episode, no, I wouldn't trust him for that.
No, but, so there's a lot of setup, and now we are getting to a major point of stuff happening in the Mandalorian. So hope everybody's happy.
And
stuff
remember, so the finale is Taika Waititi's episode.
Yep.
Taika directed the next episode.
I'm telling
you. It's almost like they set it up that way.
It's almost like it's going to be
Taika. I'm saying, like, I mean, we all love Taika Waititi. Like, I mean, and the directors of the season have all been good. I mean, Deborah Chow has.
Yeah, this is another Deborah Chow episode. Incredible. I mean, she's.
I saw people on Twitter giving her props.
Yeah, no, she's like, been the best by far.
Yeah. And she's the one
Rick
that's doing
Famuyiwa
the
behind
series.
Her. I would put Rick Famuyiwa behind her. Mm-hmm.
And Dave Filoni's been good for his first time
Favreau,
doing live
Filoni.
Action stuff.
And
yeah, I mean, even your most mundane episode of The Mandalorian is still pretty damn good, right? So,
I mean, big things are happening. And, I mean, for me, the most interesting thing I want to know is, like, was there a point to the timing of this? Like, is there anything in this episode that, like, is going to be referenced in Rise of Skywalker? Like, you know, is Baby Yoda going to show up? Rich knows the answers over there in the booth.
Baby Yoda, Baby Yoda.
Well, I think the one thing that we can take from that, like the idea of force healing, we've been asking since the first trailer for Rise of Skywalker how the Emperor comes back. And yeah. there could be a connection with that, like, or not a connection, but an explanation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of how he is able to.
That's kind of been kind of my theory, is that like they didn't just drop that major reveal at this time for nothing. Like,
right.
There's got to be it. That was a major point, and a couple other points like in the episode, like that I think could.
It's all.
I've been seeing people that have seen Rise of Skywalker, because I mean, critics in bigger cities have seen the movie. There is something that connects it to this episode of The Mandalorian. I don't know what it is. I have avoided all
now,
of it. Like
some Star Wars fan right now is like, oh my God, you spoiled.
You spoiled the connection. You spoiled Star connection. Wars things relate to each other.
There's a Rise of Skywalker preview attached to this episode, right? But we don't think that has anything to do with it, because it seems totally irrelevant.
I've avoided clicking on anything with it. I don't want to spoil it for myself.
Yeah.
But there is something that it might be a big idea.
Yeah, the other potential thing was that we learned that for sure that Baby Yoda is not a clone.
Mm.
Because there's a description of like what clones are like by who is it? Quill,
yeah.
Yeah.
He says he knows like what clones are like, and they have a certain aspect, and that Baby Yoda's too lively and kind of thinking and kind of too there to be a clone, which
I mean, you and I have been talking about from the beginning, and we've said from the beginning, like, the goal wasn't that he was a clone and they're trying to get him back. Like, they want to clone him and get his ability.
Yeah, and so it raises more questions about, like, is this Yoda? Is this not Yoda? Like, is there some kind of weird Star Wars circle of life happening? Palpatine's alive. We still have Yoda, apparently. Like, could there be some kind of connection to that? So, Rise of Skywalker's coming out tonight. We will be seeing it, and so we'll have more answers for this on our full spoilers discussion of that film shortly. All right, well, now moving on for the awesomeness that is The Mandalorian. We're going to close out today talking comics. This time we're trading in some of the X-books because they're just here right now.
There's so many.
Yeah, there's so many.
It was like five this week.
Yeah. I thought this was going to be different.
Yeah.
And I was dumb for thinking that.
Yeah, but we're going to talk about a couple things, actually. We're going to talk about two things. We're going to talk really quick. Charlie's, we brought you on here, so let's bring you on here for what we brought you on to shine. There's another big movie coming out this week that's not The Rise of Skywalker.
Ooh.
And it's Cats. Charlie, we got about 5 minutes. I'm going to give you 2 minutes to tell us about Cats.
All right. I'm looking at the camera. I'm looking at all you people.
And all your bets for 2020 about Cats.
Cats is the most insane movie I've ever seen in theaters. Like, it does not make... Oh, my God. I can't... It's hard to describe it. Like, writing the review for this was so hard because it's
comes
such
turn up.
An insane, weird... terrible thing. Like, it's ludicrous. It's unhinged. Like, there are actors in this movie that are so well respected, and like I have nothing but props for them and for Tom Hooper with them, because they go all out the whole movie. They never hold back. Idris Elba never holds back. Ian McKellen and Judy Dench never hold back in this movie. There's a scene where Ian McKellen laps water out of a dish and then makes a bunch of weird cat sounds and hisses at people. Like, Idris Elba's character has magic. He snaps his weird human hands and whisks people away into Thanos dust. And like, it's Ray Winstone is in this movie, which I did not know. And that's, if you watch gangster movies, like, that's a really weird thing to see Ray Winstone as a cat. Rebel Wilson's character trains beetles and mice to sing and dance. And these beetles and mice, like the cats, are human face, human body, beetles and mice. It is horrifying. Like, this movie is a train wreck on every level. The story doesn't make sense. Like, the songs are, other than Memory and the new song, which is actually pretty good, Beautiful Ghosts, other than those two songs, none of the other music makes sense, but the whole movie is music. And it's like, the whole thing is an audition to go to cat heaven. Like, if you don't know Cats, the whole thing is all these street cats, Jellicle Cats, which they're called, and they never explain what Jellicle means. It doesn't mean anything. It's the name of their gang. They have to audition once a year for Old Deuteronomy, which is the Judy Dench cat, and they all put on performances, and she picks one to send to the Heaviside Layer, which is past the moon and the clouds, to be reborn in a better life. They are all, it's the anti-Hunger Games. They are all vying for the one chance to die. And they're singing these songs explaining why they're important. One of them is, oh, I'm a tap dancing cat. And it's a 10-minute song about tap dancing. Because that's the whole movie.
30 seconds.
A talent show for these cats. It is, the CGI does not line up at all. The songs are weird. The performances, like they put it all out there, but it's weirdly like hypersexual. Like it's really, really sexual. It's not, I would not take a kid to see it. All that to say, I gave it a 1 out of 5, which is the lowest that we're allowed to give something. I think it's one of the worst movies I've seen in years.
And yet,
but
you seem hopeful about
something.
I am
recommending it because it's such a unique and beautiful, ridiculous train wreck.
Tell people what you predict the legacy of Cats.
Oh, yes,
Charlie.
I did see that.
I agree with this. So I think Cats, I'm going to back this up. So I think Cats is destined to be like a midnight cult movie, like The Room, like Rocky Horror Picture Show, where in years they have midnight showings at theaters and everyone in the crowd, like they're all really obsessed with doing this every year. They know at certain points in the thing, they're going to throw a certain thing across the room. At certain points, they're going to, you know, they're going to throw glitter when Taylor Swift walks on the screen. They're going to sing the songs together. They're going to have certain sayings they all do together. It's going to be this weird cult phenomenon thing, like once a year at movie theaters. This is going to have a life because of how insane and unhinged of a movie that it is. There's no way this song just dies, or this movie just dies. Like, it will have a life, and it is.
But you're not okay. But to clarify,
can we just say yes? Let's not also say that okay. Charlie Ridgely is uniquely enthused about Cats in the comic book offices right now.
He's also the only one who's seen it.
Yeah,
to be fair,
like.
You predict there's going to be a major upswing.
I believe there will be at least one other person in this office who will recommend Cats.
Megan.
Yeah. It's just I'm only recommending it because I've never seen anything like it, and I think that it's such a crazy experience. And like now, with almost every theater chain has their own subscription thing, so like I don't pay to go to a movie because I pay $15 a month or whatever for AMC A-List. So like, if you have one of those things, like just go use it to see this movie. You have a whole week off from work. Go see this movie. It's insane. Yeah, I promise you will not have
seen
it.
Again, we're not
like
talking
before.
About Star Wars. Charlie's talking about Cats.
Okay, my
Cats.
Biggest thing, and I don't want to open so up another crazy. Can of worms,
no,
is the fact that you're comparing it to Rocky Horror Picture Show.
I'm saying that the kind of life it's going to have. I'm not comparing the movies at all.
Okay.
I'm saying the following.
Like, one is good.
I mean,
depending
on who you ask,
in
a
ridiculous good way.
I'm not judging okay.
We're closing the door on all of these matters. This is as much
locking
time as I am willing to give Cats. I gave you more time than I'm willing to give. You've heard Charlie's thoughts on Cats. We will never again discuss Cats on this podcast.
My reviews on comic book.
So that's it.
Yeah, I've never had that much fun writing a review.
Can I say I've never had
Enjoy.
That much fun, though, listening to a description of Cats? I lost it.
I know. There's photos of you just sitting here
I
laughing.
I could not
like,
help it.
Rich
it was
got the
amazing.
Shots. Don't worry.
It
we
was
got the
amazing.
Shots of you
oh,
losing
my God.
It. Moving right along back to saner pastures. So Batman has just ended Tom King's run on Batman, or Tom Taylor. Which one? I forget. I always confuse
Tom King.
It.
Tom King.
Tom King. I was
Tom
right
King's
the first
done.
Time. Tom King's
you were not
on
alone
Batman.
In that, by the way.
Yeah, I know. I mess this up all the time. On Batman with the City of Bane crossover, which we're going to talk about this really briefly instead of the X books. So me and Matt were talking, and City of Bane has been a very unique Batman story in the sense that it kind of is billed as a very comic booky kind of almost 90s DC crossover. The cover art is like that, like for most of it. The premise, of course, is Bane takes over Gotham.
Yeah.
It's a city.
Yeah, it's a city, and he does the Dark Knight Rises thing. He closes it off to the outside world. He makes all the villains cops after he brainwashes them using Psycho Pirate, and he just enforces these insanely harsh kind of dictatorship-like conditions. And he has aid by doing this from Thomas Wayne, the Batman from the Flashpoint universe, who, thanks to what it is, Doomsday Clock?
Yeah.
That he made it back into this universe.
Which just explained that all, by the way.
Yeah.
So late, anyway.
Yeah, I feel like his origin story was better. Thomas Wayne's origin issue was a better explanation than, like, Doomsday Clock. But, so Thomas Wayne is now in the main Batman universe, and he has a problem with Bruce Wayne becoming Batman. That's, as a father, that's unconscionable to him, and so he tries to break Batman by helping Bane do this thing to prove to Batman that he's not really a good, effective, or the Batman. And what we liked about this, I think you and I talked and agreed, is how this kind of crossover subverted expectations of a crossover in like the best way.
Yeah.
This was like one of the most personal Batman stories you've ever had in a crossover where it could easily have been just issues and issues and issues and pages of the villain doing stuff and dedicated to the villain mostly. But like for a crossover called City of Bane, Bane plays a remarkably small part in this crossover.
Yeah.
And a lot of the issues are conceptually some of the best Batman kind of stories I've read in recent memory, just in some very powerful moments. So we're going to talk full spoilers for City of Bane. If you have not read City of Bane, you really should when it comes out in trade, but we're going to talk full spoilers because it's impossible to do.
Yeah.
To talk about this. And so in the ending, in the last two issues, Matt's covered it every week on our comics review, but the last two things were, there was this big pivotal fight because Batman, Thomas Wayne kind of beat up Batman and left him in this pit before coming back to Gotham. And we just kind of jumped into the story. Like, it just happened. Bane locks it down. Here are the conditions. Thomas Wayne is doing it with his new superpowered assistant. Who's that?
Gotham Girl.
Gotham Girl, yeah. Because he kind of gets control of Gotham Girl and kind of uses her as a deterrent. And Batman is kind of left, has been injured and has to be kind of healed and rehabilitated by Catwoman, who he's just kind of like then on vacation, or not vacation, but exile with. And he and Catwoman really fundamentally bond and have a lot of sex. Now, that sounds titillating, but what Tom King does brilliantly was this kind of examines Batman mythos on like a very, not like Court of Owls in the sense of like the mythos of Gotham, but like the actual mythos of these characters, their history, their connections over all these decades and what they mean and all that. So you had like great issues like one issue of just Batman and Catwoman having conversations at different points on their like little exile vacation.
Yeah.
Before she finally gets to him and finally like pierces that veil and cowl he wears around his heart and finally makes him admit like he loves her and they're connected and that they're going to be like an actual team and an item. There's a that fantastic issue where it's just Catwoman and Batman when they finally get back to Gotham and sneak into Arkham. It's just a fist fight with them and Bane with like none of the usual utility belts and Venom and all that comic book stuff. It's literally just like a cage match of them. And it is a brutal fight that ends. Now, here's where I kind of deviated. That issue was great. And it was very pivotal because like Thomas Wayne comes in and he shoots Bruce Wayne and he shoots Bane. And those seem to be soft bullets because neither one of them seem to be lastingly affected by this. Yeah. Like it makes it seem like Bane was dead. He got shot in the head. But in this last issue, he's alive and
he's
well.
Just chilling.
He's in the hospital. He's hurt, but he's not dead. And Bruce didn't get like paralyzed or anything. Yeah. He was fine the next issue. So that aside, Alfred dies in this crossover. Yeah. Thomas Wayne kills Alfred as a way of, well, he had him hostage as a way of keeping Batman and his in the Bat family away. Of course, Batman sent like Damian Wayne in there to infiltrate and the Batman family. And as a result, Thomas Wayne, you know, makes good on his threat and has Bane snap Alfred's neck while he's tied to a chair.
Yeah.
Which is a major change to the Batman universe, of course. And there's a wonderful eulogy issue that, like I said, these concepts of these issues are so great, where Batman just wakes up in a room that Thomas Wayne has trapped him in with Alfred's dead body. And it's a voiceover of Alfred's like last recorded thoughts and about like why he's the one who kind of forces the hand to make Thomas Wayne kill him so that he can free Bruce Wayne and Batman up from, you know, being held hostage because that's how much love. And it's just, and the whole issue is just Batman trying to figure out how to get out of this room, listening to this recording of Alfred, trying to like lay down his corpse and cover it. And it's just such a powerful issue because it's just all about Alfred's emotions and telling Bruce Wayne about how he was when a little boy, how he used to be so full of joy and all this stuff and what he wants from his life again. And it's just really powerful Batman stuff. It's not treated as an exploitative, like, comic gimmick. Oh, Alfred dead. Like, no, it's like real kind of human emotional stuff. And also the Thomas Wayne kind of origin story issue is great. Showing him like in the Flashpoint universe, the events of Doomsday Clock and how he got over here. And this deep kind of pain of he's not just a villain. He's a father that is trying to basically use some really twisted disciplinary lessons to kind of knock his son out of this bad path if he was like a teenager who just started smoking or
because
something
he keeps
like
telling him that I want you to marry her. I want you to like have the life
leave
that
Batman,
I didn't have.
Settle down with Selina.
Yeah, like he wants positive things for him. He didn't want to kill Alfred, but he felt like he had to make a point, right?
And that's like the dark thing. You find out that like when his wife, Martha Wayne, in the Flashpoint universe became Joker, but when she finds out that, like, in this universe, Bruce Wayne's Batman, she kills herself.
Yeah.
Which is so horribly dark.
Yeah.
Like, and, like, yeah, and it just breaks Thomas Wayne to find out that his son, like, became this thing that he became in his universe, and he's really trying to do this, and, like you said, but that's what makes the climax of this thing great, because it's not a big villain battle.
No,
it's
not at all.
Literally, like, a fist fight between Batman and his dad, that ends with him knocking his dad out and being like, you ain't my daddy. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Every, like, half the kids from black households probably had this experience at one point in their life. I know, like, I did, but I didn't knock my father out. He's a much better fighter than me. But also, my older brother had already gotten knocked out, so I kind of, I knew how that worked. So anyway, that's a little origin story for me. But back to Batman. So, like, yeah. And so it's basically this whole story, all of this stuff, all the elements, all the characters are basically culminates into this wonderful kind of reaffirmation of Batman about why he's Batman,
yeah,
and how now he's going to be this different kind of Batman that doesn't have to be like the same angry loner. Like in the issue before the Bane fight, there's a great line where he says, like, my enemies always expect that I have to do things alone and that, like, I'm this crazy angry loner. But now with Catwoman there, it's good. And I think this issue does straightens out a lot of the mythos, but more importantly, it actually sells you on the whole Batman-Catwoman connection. Mm-hmm. So if you were freaking out about the wedding and all that stuff, oh, by the way, they get married in this one.
Yeah, I love how they handle that.
In the most Batman-Catwoman way. No big superhero wedding. They just wake up one day and they're just like, oh, we were going to get married. We never went through with it. Like, you just want to be married? And it's just like, yeah.
And there's a ring. And yeah, it's because they get distracted by just like loving each other that they miss the judge coming out the bar like 4 a.m. And so they're like, yeah, we're together. That,
yeah, they're
awesome
waiting for
spread.
A judge who can marry them as they're in costume and end up just doing
yeah,
and waking up in bed and be like, all right, look, we don't need all this. We're married, like, yeah, together. And it's so, like, and awesome. It makes the Batman Catwoman relationship actually work.
Yeah.
And like, not just as like, and Catwoman's not just like some, oh, can you pick up some new paper towels on the home way home? No, it's like, this is a full partnership. Like, Batman and Catwoman, I love how they call them each other Bat and Cat. Like,
I love that so much.
So cheesy, but like,
and it's crazy because the stuff I've seen about this issue, and you could say a lot of Tom King's run, is a little divisive amongst comic fans on social media and stuff. And this issue in particular has been, I think, some people were expecting the buildup to be that big fight, let's see a major revelation of who's really behind it or whatever, and see this, you know, Bane come into it. The only time Bane shows up is when it's in that epilogue-ish part of seeing Thomas Wayne get his back broken.
Yeah.
Which is, you know,
Bane repeats
amazing.
The history of breaking Batman's yeah. back, only this time he breaks Thomas Wayne's back, which is effectively to take Thomas Wayne off the board for a
yeah.
while.
Yeah. You know, but like, that stuff is few and far between. This really is, again, like King has done, an analysis of two people who, you know, at one point, I mean, back on that island when Selina was saying, like, the reason we didn't get married, the reason I left essentially you at the altar. And for a while there in King's run, Batman's a jerk. Like, Batman's, as anyone would be who was left at the altar when you're like,
we're
oh, we're going to get
nightmares
married.
Here.
Yeah. So yeah. Like, you know, he's upset. And in those, like, King really did a good job of slowly bringing that character along and trying to explore real human emotions and making this feel like a person and not a caricature. So I know some people will not like this issue for that reason. There's not that big action payoff. I thought if you've been enjoying King's run, you'll love it.
Now, let me ask, as someone who started King's run but hasn't been keeping up, I know that King was initially supposed to go to, like, what was it, 100?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's done with Batman the book, but not Batman the character, because yes. their Batman and Catwoman book is coming, correct?
Yeah, and that'll fill in the 15 issues that he was supposed to
right.
do this.
How do you feel about the resolution of the book at this point, though?
So I am not, the one thing I didn't love was the epilogue, which the epilogue sets up
Joker.
Tynan's run that yep. will he will be the next one, and it's going to be a Joker story. I'm not thrilled about that because honestly, I'm a little Jokered out.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many Batman villains that are out there, and they've been doing some great stuff with Mr. Freeze lately and Mad Hatter. Yeah. There's so many other characters. So to see a Joker story, I'm not going to lie, I was a little bummed.
And it's very kind of not hackneyed, but it was a very cliche Joker story.
Yeah.
And one of his thugs says something he doesn't like, and he does something horrible to him.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, I know Batman's
identity.
Yeah,
and the setup that he knows Batman's identity, and he's been saving it because then he decides, on a whim, as the Joker would, oh, no, it would be more fun just to reveal this. So, yeah.
Like, that has me, like, I'm not enthused. I like Tynan's work. His other stuff is great, and I liked his detective run, so, until the last arc. But, you know, so I will give it a shot, but I'm more excited about King's Batman Catwoman book because I want to see how that was supposed. He's essentially just porting over his idea to that series.
Yeah, and it's something that sounds so cheesy at the beginning, I think, yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, he nails those characters, their history, and their relationship really well. So if you haven't, check out Batman, City of Bane. Should be getting collected any minute now.
Yeah.
And go back and check that out. All right, that'll do it. We're going to get out of here for this episode of Comic Book Nation. If you're just now getting into the show, we put up new episodes every Wednesday, every Friday on comicbook.com, or you can subscribe there or on your favorite listening platform or on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Google Playlists, or you can catch us on YouTube. I used to have an Alexa plug, but Alexa's been messing up lately, and they're not really putting us on there with easy voices.
Really?
So, rude, Alexa.
Alexa.
Screw you. Moving right along, if you want to continue the conversation with us about anything we talked about, hit us up at Comic Book Nation. You can find me at Kofi Outlaw.
You can find me at Matt Aguilar CB.
And I am at Roland Bishop.
And I'm at Charlie Ridgely.
Or wherever Cats fan
Let's
clubs.
Let's talk about Cats.
Cats fan clubs are
just
online.
Do the hashtag Cats on Twitter and you'll find
Charlie. Yeah, you'll find Charlie. He'll peer you in a glitter, put in a poof of glitter and Thanos dust. All right. If you like the show, go on iTunes, leave us a 5-star review because we're coming up on another junction where we're going to be reading some 5-star reviews off iTunes and sending out some free t-shirts. So be sure to leave your review now. Otherwise, that'll do it. This is Comic Book Nation. Thank you for riding with us. Be sure to stay tuned for our Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker review and spoilers discussion bonus episode, which is also coming this week. So you got three. Merry Christmas. We're out.
Deuce.